Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's Thursday, April 2nd. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Tanzina Vega, who's on maternity leave. The coronavirus has been exposing and deepening systems of inequality all across the country. Low-wage workers without sick leave have limited options for making ends meet. Students without internet access are struggling as schools move online. And those without health care may be unable to seek help if they get sick. Adding on to that, nearly 10 million people in the U.S. have filed for unemployment in the past 2 weeks alone. In American Indian communities, the coronavirus outbreak has exposed a number of long-standing public health inequities. Some tribal leaders, like Rodney Bordeaux, the president of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe in South Dakota, have issued a state of emergency due to concerns over how the pandemic will affect their communities.
I'm troubled that our people do not currently have access to the CDC-approved test kits, either from the CDC or the Indian Health Service. I'm also concerned that the state has not made available these tests for our people, especially our elders and our other vulnerable populations.
Urban Indian health programs, which were allocated some money in the recent stimulus package, have been underfunded for decades, despite the fact that roughly 70% of American Indians live in urban and suburban areas. I spoke with Francis Crevier of the National Council for Urban Indian Health about what the coronavirus outbreak has meant for urban Indian communities, and Julian Bear Runner, president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, about how it's affecting rural tribal populations. I first asked Julian Bear Runner, who also declared a state of emergency for his tribe, what the situation there is like and how he came to that decision.
The situation with the Indian Health Service here on the reservation, you know, we have 6 respirators. We have a limited access to specialty care providers, which pushes us to send a lot of our membership off the reservation to surrounding areas within the state, as well as the state of Nebraska, for the special services that are needed. And it's a comprehensive healthcare facility, but they're very limited. They're underfunded. And equipment there is just, you know, it's either not there or, you know, not up to date. So, and we don't have the personnel there to operate some of the equipment. So, you know, with assessing, you know, the situation and the, you know, we have a housing shortage here on the reservation. Some, you know, families have, we have up to, you know, possibly 5 families living in one household. Being in such a rural area, you know, we have a couple grocery stores here on the reservation. Just putting everything together, you know, I deemed it, you know, in an emergency state to be prepared as this virus, you know, was spreading throughout the country.
You said you have 6 respirators. How many people on the reservation, and do you have any positive COVID cases just yet?
We have no positive COVID cases as of right now. However, we do have approximately 25,000 members living here on the reservation, and you know, we have a total enrolled membership of 45,000. So half of them are currently living here on the reservation.
That means you're concerned that you face some serious challenges if there is an outbreak on the reservation.
Most definitely, you know, if we have one person that contracts the virus and they return home, like I said, there's a possibility that they would contaminate, you know, 5 families, you know, which could be 25 to 30 people. You know, so if that was the case, I mean, if we, and one thing is, you know, we have a lot of elders, you know, the medical conditions here on the reservation, a lot of our members are, you know, are high risk or they are diabetic. We have a lot of cardiac patients, patients on dialysis, asthma. You know, we have all these underlying health conditions that make us such a vulnerable group of people to this pandemic. So that was the reason being, you know, I mean, just weighing, you know, what we have, our capabilities of if just one household alone was to contract the virus, you know, this would just overwhelm our already overwhelmed system, you know, such as, you know, healthcare. And yep. with our emergency medical services, our ambulance program is severely underfunded. We have only 5 ambulances that operate a little over 3 million acre land base. You know, and with IHS reporting back to the tribe that they were advised, you know, to cease ordering of the supplies because of the overwhelming demand, even, you know, raised a greater cause for concern.
Sure. Francis, let's zoom out a bit if we could. Can you give a sense of the national picture for urban Indian health? There are about 40 urban Indian health organizations. How have they functioned historically?
Those urban Indian organizations were created as part of the trust obligation when Congress had the relocation area and moved us off of reservations and into urban settings when they were under the Kill the Indian, Save the Man policy. And so those organizations are there to really help with healthcare for our Native people. And what happens, though, in the IHS system, the IHS system is severely underfunded. It's at less than $6 billion, and it should be at over $30 billion. And so the lack of resources is very, very apparent, and it's really hard right now because we are seeing a lot of cases in a lot of the urban areas as well as on reservations, on some reservations, and there's just not a lot of help right now. And so we're hopeful that starts soon, but there is a lot of need out there.
What else are you still asking for from the federal government?
I mean, we don't have personal protective gear. The whole IHS system does not. And so that has been a huge barrier. 2 of our facilities have had to shut down for lack of protective gear, and they're losing staff as they're being infected. And also, you know, with the Affordable Care Act, you know, there and I know the chairman's probably very familiar with this statement. IHS, they used to say before the Affordable Care Act that they will be don't get sick after June 1st because there won't be any funding to take care of you and facilities would shut down. And so we are starting to see that facilities are having to shut down. So we need Congress to give the tribes and the urban programs access to the national stockpile. We need them to really put a large investment into protecting our people. You know, we are one of the most impacted when it comes to the flu and access to healthcare. We do have high statistics in that. And so we need lots of funding and lots of resources to really help, as well as infrastructure items. I know that Congress is even discussing in the next package what the needs are for infrastructure. And the chairman just said there's only 6 respirators in IHS. So, and with telehealth being an issue, you know, now there needs to be a lot of support to help get all of our facilities up and running in the telehealth space. And so, you know, there's just a lot of investment that's needed. And in urban settings, this won't be a problem in terms of internet, but a lot of reservations don't have access to the internet.
Julian, beyond the medical care, how else have you been preparing for the outbreak so far in the reservation? I mean, is social distancing happening?
I issued an executive order suspending all travel, as well as a lockdown of our facilities, regards like our elder facilities. We have a nursing home that is operated by the Oglala Sioux tribe, to limit access to visitors, but also to try, we've been establishing Skype and other necessary means so that our relatives can still communicate with their elders in the nursing home. We also have another independent, or well, it's an elder facility that, you know, it's for those independent elders that you know, don't require special assistance. So we locked that facility down. I ordered our Parks and Recreation program to cease the sale of our buffalo in the event that we have to, you know, revert back to them as being our primary food source and supplier. That, you know, since the beginning of time, you know, the buffalo has always provided everything that we needed. So under my direction, I ceased the sale of buffalo. So just in the anticipation that if our store shelves were supposed, you know, would be depleted, you know, that we have a means necessary to provide food for our people. You know, we also have our original way of life. Our ceremonies remind us that, you know, every hard time that we've ever faced as First Nations or as Lakota people, you know, our ceremonies are what got us through this.
You mentioned in there the importance of elders, and I was curious because coronavirus is especially deadly for the elderly from what we've seen so far. And I was hoping you could expand on that about the role that elders play in your community and what it would mean to lose them from this virus.
Definitely, you know, they're our most vital group of people within our society or our tribe. We were always it was an oral teaching. You know, our history was never really written down. It was passed down through generation through generation. So, you know, they are wisdom keepers. They hold that wisdom of our original and knowledge of our original songs, language, our way of life, our values. And so if they were to be impacted by this virus, you know, it would be very detrimental to the tribe because we would lose all of that wisdom that they carry. So, you know, it's really difficult and it's really a struggle, but we're doing our best to ensure that we take those preventative measures to really secure them. And then, you know, sitting down, you know, some of our elders, they like to, you know, continue to do things on their own. They're very independent and don't, you know, they try not to rely on others for help. So with one of our meetings during this emergency declaration, you know, I asked IHS if they would set up a program here where our elders, if they wanted to come in or they needed to come in to get their medication, that and so it has been implemented that now if the elders can call a hotline or number at the hospital, and the pharmacist will actually bring the medication out to them in the parking lot so they don't have to go into the hospital. Then another thing was sitting down and going on the radio show and, you know, asking our people, you know, to take on a responsibility to, you know, reach out to their elders and, you know, see if they need things from the grocery store or things that require them to come out into society and try to take on that task for them so that we're doing our best. Because a lot of our elders, they don't want to reside in a facility. You know, they want to go to a nursing home or anything. You know, they want to remain at home. So, you know, trying to do our best to alleviate a lot of their hardships and their burdens that would cause them to come out into society or into the public.
The beauty of our communities is you're seeing what the chairman was referring to take care of our elders and step up and make a hotline and protect them. And that's what a lot of our communities are doing. But we definitely need access to what the mainstream has access to really make sure that our people are protected and we can do that.
Julian Bear Runner is the president of Oglala Sioux Tribe in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and Frances Crevier is the executive director for the National Council for Urban Indian Health. Thank you both so much.
Yes, sir. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.